Good morning, good evening, good everything to you. Welcome here. This is Lizzie and Justin, and we are turning towards life. This week, we have a very exciting situation because we have a wonderful member of our community, Ella, who's written a poem in response to one of our conversations. And it's such a wonder and so wonderful. And this morning, I was reflecting on the fact that we've had a good handful of community people sending us things or us reading their work in some way and us bringing them as sources. And I want to make the invitation to anyone to send us anything that they would like us to do, and we will run it through the Turning Towards Life sieve and see if it feels right to be here. We would love that. So I want to thank Ella and everybody so far in our community and beyond who have contributed to sources for us to have as our third in this beautiful conversation that we've been in all this time, Justin. Ella's poem is really beautiful, and I know it's your source, Justin, and thank you for bringing it here, and thank you, Ella, for writing it. Thank you for feeling everything you felt in response to our conversations that gave birth to this piece of writing. It's really, really wonderful. And as usual, you can find this on our website at turningtowards.life. You could email us if you have a source, if you've written something that feels either as a response to something we've spoken about or just because it's yours in the world and you think it might be something great for us to have here between us. We'd be so open to that. We also love hearing from you. We got an email, I think yesterday or today, I'm not quite sure when it arrived, from somebody in Rochester, New York, telling us that they were listening under the stars to our episode on the wonderful poem by Bobby Morrow called To Be. And she was sharing her thoughts and feelings with us, and it was such a joy to receive. So I want to invite us again, as Justin did last time, to share, say hello, email us hello@turningtowards.life. We absolutely love to hear from you. So thank you to everybody who's messaged us before, and even if you're going to do it again and again, we love that. So hello to all of you. Also, just to say a quick thing about the fact that we have Turning Towards Life Live beginning again, and we're opening the doors again to season 3, and the topic is love, and that's starting in September, and we would love to have you with us. Justin, you and I are also together teaching for 2 days online at the beginning of September, and you can find more about that on thirdspace.org. You can come and find us and see what we're up to there as well. We would love to have you with us. So that's my preamble for the day, Justin, and thank you for being here. We've got a me in London in normal circumstances, and Justin is in Cornwall with quite ropey internet connection. So we're going to see how we go. And thank you, Justin, for doing the by hook or by crook to be here with internet connection that's not 100%, but we'll see, and hopefully it will work out. Thank you, Justin, for being here.
I'm very glad to be here. I'm smiling at you, know this, Lizzie, but I'll let everyone in too, that I'm sitting in the laundry room in the house that I'm staying in, because it's the only spot where I can get decent internet without also interrupting my family and everyone else who is in the house. And we are perched on the edge of land and sea, which is my beloved place at the moment, is to be on this edge place, but where the land ends and the sea begins. I've been spending a lot of time on this edge, actually in Cornwall, over the last few weeks. So it's very nice to be here, and I'm glad we can make this work. And hello, everybody. And yes, thank you, Ella. It's really quite something when somebody who is connected in some way to Turning Towards Life or to Third Space or to us, Lizzie, sends us a piece of work, or which is also the right kind of writing for this conversation. And I've said this to Ella already, that I think this is a wonderful poem and powerful and important, and it's very, very glad to have it right in the center of us and to do what we always do, which is to land the source in the middle and then see the conversation that arises from it. And I wanted to add, just before we begin, Lizzie, to something that you said, which is, it occurred to me to say that we always intended Turning Towards Life to be a conversation. Clearly, it's a conversation between the two of us and with a third something, which is the source, and with another third something, which is life itself. but it's also intended to be a conversation with many others. And one of the ways that that happens is, for the many of you who listen or watch, we know that the conversation happens inside you as you listen and watch, and that often you take it to other people you love or who are important to you. But there is this other whole form of conversation which is live and with us and with others. So our Foundations of Coaching program on the in the second week of September is that, and Turning Towards Life most certainly is that. It's an opportunity to be in this kind of conversation with other people. And so I also wanted to recommend that you go to turningtowards.life and sign up for our weekly email. It's a very simple thing to do. And then once a week, you'll get not only the conversation and the source, but you'll also get news of all of these other forms of conversation that are happening around. It's a very good way to, if you think you might one day want to join us, which is an easy and it's easy to join and then very rich, and you can join in September or at some other time, sign up for the email. And that way we can stay in touch with you and you can stay in touch with us. So here is today's source. It's called Where Words Kneel. It's by Ella Dessington. Thank you, Ella, for writing this and sending this to us. And I'm going to read it. And then, Lizzie, you're going to read it. And then we're going to talk. Where Words Kneel. Freedom is a restless word. The moment we believe we have found it, it begins quietly building walls around itself. Not because freedom deceives us, but because language longs to settle while life refuses to stay still. Trust follows close behind. We speak of it as though it were something earned, something possessed, something carefully placed between two people like a bridge. Yet every bridge eventually becomes a structure, and every structure forgets it was first imagined to help someone cross. I keep wondering whether words suffer from the same temptation as empires. They arrive to serve and then slowly begin governing. Not with force, but with definition. Not with violence, but with certainty. Safety, freedom, trust, belonging. Each begins as a living experience until we ask it to carry more than any word can bear. And still, beneath all the naming, life keeps escaping. Relationship does not speak in nouns, it speaks in returns. In the hand that reaches again, in the apology that arrives tomorrow, in the silence that makes room instead of closing the door, in the quiet decision to remain available after certainty has left the room. So I wonder if freedom has never been the absence of constraint. I wonder whether freedom is what becomes possible when neither of us is required to remain who we were when we first began speaking. And I wonder whether listening has never been the search for better language. Maybe it is the slower practice of staying with one another until language itself grows gentle enough, humble enough, to kneel before experience.
Thank you, Justin. Where Words Kneel by Ella Dessington. Freedom is a restless word. The moment we believe we have found it, it begins quietly building walls around itself. Not because freedom deceives us, but because language longs to settle while life refuses to stay still. Trust follows close behind. We speak of it as though it was something earned, something possessed, something carefully placed between two people like a bridge. Yet every bridge eventually becomes a structure, and every structure forgets it was first imagined to help someone cross. I keep wondering whether words suffer from the same temptation as empires. They arrive to serve, then slowly begin governing, not with force but with definition, not with violence but with certainty. Safety, freedom, trust, belonging. Each begins as a living experience until we ask it to carry more than any word can bear. And still beneath all the naming, life keeps escaping. Relationship does not speak in nouns, it speaks in returns. in the hand that reaches again, in the apology that arrives tomorrow, in the silence that makes room instead of closing the door, in the quiet decision to make to remain available after certainty has left the room. So I wonder if freedom has never been the absence of constraint. I wonder whether freedom is what becomes possible when neither of us is required to remain who we were when we first began speaking. And I wonder whether listening has never been the search for better language. Maybe it's the slower practice of staying with one another until language itself grows gentle enough, humble enough, to kneel before experience.
Gosh, I've got so much to say, Lizzie, and nothing to say in response to Ella's poem, which I think is going to be a challenge, because there's a way in which the very thing that Ella's pointing to, I think, is going to trip me up repeatedly, which is that language is necessary, but also woefully insufficient to express what it is that I want to say, which will probably have changed anyway by the time I've said it. So here's the thing. So I'm going to sort of take a breath. I've been thinking, I think the place I want to start, I want to say two things to start, and they're sort of different pathways, really. One is an inquiry I've been in about myself, Lizzie, which is that I know that because of the kind of person I am and the kind of mind I have and the kind of history I have and the kind of opportunities I've had and all of that, I know that I can use language comes to me very readily. I very often have words available and I can say things. But I've been interested more recently in recent months in noticing how easy it is for me, I won't speak for anyone else, but how easy it is for me to have words before I know what I mean. And I can be very convincing with words. I can say things and sound like I mean them even before I know what I mean. And then once I've spoken, once I've said something in a definitive sounding way, in a way that sounds like I'm intelligent enough and clear enough and settled enough and all those kind of things, and my words are out in the world, already, of course, other people, like if I'm talking to you, you already understand me and you might take me seriously for what I say. But I'm not sure that the meaning of the words has really arrived with me yet. Often I'm saying things, but the actual meaning that I want to convey comes afterwards, comes later. And I've been watching this a lot because I think at this point in my life, more often, I'm going to want to say far more often than I've ever said before. Actually, I don't know. I don't know what I think. I don't know what I feel yet. It's going to take me some time. And to me, it's like the other side of what, and that's what I'm experiencing right now, is this sort of wondering, how often do I really mean what I say at the point that I say it? And then how do I revise myself afterwards to go, when I said this 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, last week, I think I was barely close to what was real, and it's changed anyway. And that gets me to the other part of to what Ella seems at least most explicitly to be writing about, which is when we say trust, when we say freedom, when we say safety, when we say belonging, it's so easy to assume that these are something solid and settled. And if I say to you something like, there isn't safety between us, Lizzie, or there isn't trust between us, or there is safety, or there is trust between us, and I make it into a thing like a bridge, and we make it like a bridge, we might miss that the something that's not even a thing that we call safety or freedom or trust or belonging is living and moving all the time. Frankly, I have no idea what to do with this at the moment as I'm speaking. But trust is a really good example, because as Ella's poem says so excellently, trust isn't something you can point to like it were a bridge or a brick or a trust is a process that's being made between us. It's a living phenomenon that is made in you and in me and in the in-between and embedded in all of our cultural assumptions and our histories and our bodies that the word only points to in the shallowest way. I think what I feel, the reason I'm talking about these two things, that often I realize I don't really know what I'm saying yet when I speak. And Ella's point that words look more solid than they are, it does two things simultaneously. So one, I feel very ungrounded. Like if I can't rely on words as solid enough, what on earth am I going to do? How am I going to talk to you? Let's see, how am I going to understand you? And at the same time, it wakes me up to, gosh, if I was prepared not to be so certain about what we were talking about, if it was okay to go with you, Lizzie, can we slow this down so we can really even begin to get a sense of what it is that we're up to here, or what it is that we're talking about, or what it is that's arisen between us that's difficult, where we don't understand one another? Can we go slow enough and not feel like we have to all the time stay in mutual understanding? Can we fall into confusion together so that the living something that's here, that is safety or trust or freedom or belonging, can arise? I think that's what's being asked of us. And I think it's hard. I'm finding it hard to talk about, but it feels necessary, not just for our ordinary everyday human relationships, but for the world as a whole, that we allow ourselves to be a little bit less certain all the time that we know what on earth is going on. And then we might have a chance of meeting one another and this mysterious, quartet of four mysterious somethings that Ella's brought into the conversation, safety, freedom, trust, and belonging. I think they're all mysterious in the way that people are. So there's my opening. I think I have to stop. You know, open there. I'd so love to hear what happens for you at this point in the conversation.
Oh, well, I think I'm in a similar scenario myself of having to take a breath and in some way see if I can take Ella's invitation to have my language be gentle enough and humble enough that it could kneel before experience. In that way, I think the way I'm holding that anyway is to see whether I could speak, have experience, show what my language is rather than my languaging just being given or something, like my words just being already things or something, but have my, because what is it to, like, I had a really visceral dream last night, Justin. And it's, you know what dreams are like? In a way, they're pure experiencing. And so then to narrow them into language somehow, which will just never do it justice, is a thing. So I'm interestingly in that dynamic in myself of feeling the importance of this dream and knowing all of the inadequacies of language. And yet there's value in having a go. And in a way with a dream, the leadingness of experience being the first thing you're calling on, and then finding language, I think, is maybe the order that Ella's inviting us into, like including our experiencing as we speak, rather than just kind of getting a load of reference points that we knew before and throwing them into the thing. And in a way, that's, I think, what the value of turning towards life is, Justin, is that we sit here and we don't just say a load of things we already know and rattle them off and have scripts or something. We're speaking from experiencing. And so I love that Ella's pointing into that. And funnily enough, it makes me think of all those times, Justin, on here. And if anyone's a longer term listener, you'll remember very often I say, oh dear, I now don't know what love means or what humility means or even what gravity really, really means, or what anything is. I think, and that's the whole point, I think, of turning towards life in some way, is that as we speak from experience, and when I say experience, I don't mean like some wise thing, I mean experiencing, we speak from what's arising in us in the moment, it does call everything into question. And so this line that Ella has, in the quiet decision to remain available after certainty has left the room. And that's what relationship is made of. To me, that's the heart of it in a way, is that certainty, feeling, like you said, that ground of, oh yes, I know what that thing is. It so often and repeatedly gets undone and undone and undone just by asking some simple questions like, what are you experiencing right now in the midst of whatever it is that you feel sure about or whatever? So I feel I'm also feeling on the edge, Justin, of experiencing and finding language. And I think what I'm grateful for in Ella's writing is a real deep and genuine questioning of that there is any kind of arrival at anything. You know, that's why writing our website, Justin, was so hard, I think. Because we had to say some things about us, and we long to say things about us, and we want to tell people who we are. But the depth of inquiry that had to go into that in ourselves to have something that was living and alive, that didn't feel trite or kind of only for now, and tomorrow it would all be different, to find something timeless to say. I think it does require us to be in expression of our experiencing so that it can feel alive, that there's aliveness in it. So I'm really grateful for this curiosity about language. And I know you and I love language because it, as you said, means that we can be a bridge to one another, to connect. And that connection is so vital and so important. And yet, to have that connection imbued with our experiencing, to really seek to know and feel and sense one another's worlds, whatever mess or disorganizedness that might look like, and not take that to be true forever, but to inside our relationship, hold this brilliant definition of freedom, that we don't have to turn up and stand by the thing I said yesterday or something, but that we could have that kind of intimacy and that kind of sense of togetherness and trust, that we could work something out. And I could go from thinking one thing to another thing in a conversation where we're close to our experiencing together. And that's kind of what we're here for. We're not here for me to say everything I think and you to say everything you think and then, I don't know, something happen. Surely we're here to be in relationship and grow and evolve our understanding of life, that we might deepen and widen and open to connecting our universes together in some way.
Yeah. It's occurring to me, Lucy, as you're talking about that freedom to revise ourselves and to revise our understanding and to revise who we are, and that the question that Ella's poem asks has quite a lot to do with time, in that words that arrive with their meanings already settled. All the time component of it is dealt with. You know, if we have one definition of trust or one definition of safety or one definition of freedom, or if I have one definition of myself or of you that remains static, time is taken out of our consideration. And I was thinking about you as a living being. I've known you for, what, 16 years, something like that, Lizzie, around that. And that means in that time, you and I are both very different in many, many ways from the ones that we were when we met. Our bodies are different, our feelings are different, our relationships are different, our understanding of ourselves and the world are different over a long arc of time. And as you watch somebody, if we know somebody long enough to be with them as they age and as we age, we know that we are ever flowing. We're never the same. And that is true minute by minute as well. And when we, if I if I try to fix you, if I say, well, Lizzie, you've changed, I can't be in relationship with you anymore. Sometimes that's what happens. Something changes and we go, my attention's going somewhere else. But if we stay, if we're willing to stay with a person through their changes, if the level of our commitment to that person is to stay as they change, we see it. And that's the question that I've got about words now, is something like, and it's really hard to give good language to, because there's clearly a through line of Lizzie and of Justin. Like, the one that you are today is not disconnected from the one that you were that I first met you. That's the through line of a friendship and the through line of partnership and things that are important. And yet also you're changing, you're moving all the time. And we're able to hold those together in a way with people. We know how to do that, at least somewhat. So with words and with our experience, can we do the same? I could understand how one of the challenges of Ella's words here is, well, if I don't know what trust is and I don't know what safety is, how am I ever going to establish trust or safety if the definition is so movable that I can never catch any of it? So we can catch something of, we do catch it inside ourselves. We know what trust might feel like. We know the times when we felt trustable and trusted and safe. And yet we also know, if we'll pay attention, that our language falls very, very short. And so there's something here that's really hard. I think this whole field is hard to grasp. And that's exactly the point, is it's not graspable. Is that for you and I, for example, as a little microcosm of the world, to stay talking about, what does the trust that we have between us, what is that like? What does it mean? What does it evoke? What does it remind us of? What does it feel like? What is it connected to? Where does it break? Where does it grow again? To be in that ongoing conversation is what it requires in order to trust. Because trust is living like a Lizzie is, or a Justin is, or like the world is, and safety is the same, and freedom is the same. So there are times when our very clear definitions really help. You know, there are times to go, it's unsafe. I'm walking along the cliff paths here in Cornwall. It's most definitely unsafe to run along the cliff paths 3 feet from the 200-foot drop. You know, there are those places. But what is the kind of safety and trust that enable me to walk 200 miles along the path? What is that really? What is the kind of safety and trust and freedom it takes to be in a marriage or a friendship or an organization or a community? These are ever moving. And so I feel like I want to sort of stretch myself out between two poles here. I want to hold on to the pole of knowing, to go, there's a sort of place of knowing enough to be able to talk. And I want to hold on to the pole of unknowing and aliveness and changeability. And I want to allow myself to stretch between the two. And then I want to be in conversation with you that stretches between the two, that allows us to hold on and let go at the same time. Somehow this invitation requires both ends of some things that we tend to think of as opposites or polarities, and then to go, so it's endless. So knowing safety and knowing freedom and knowing trust and knowing belonging and bringing them about with one another and in ourselves, that is an endless commitment. It is never settled. This is never done, because any time we pin it down too much, it wriggles out of our hands in all the ways that Ella points to and all the ways that you're saying.
I think this whole realm of conversation is also pointing to just profound complexity as well. And when things become so complex and intertwined and unfathomable, this feels like it's at play as well. that somehow complexity is an invitation into these curiosities of wondering what something actually means. What do I actually mean when I say that? And I've been reflecting recently, Justin, and I'm noticing the pattern in my reflection, which is like, oh, okay, so I want to say this thing, and I imagine myself saying it. And then I say, well, but what's my intention in saying that? What am I actually wanting to come about from saying that? And then somehow there's a behind and a behind and a behindness process that happens where I end up with the first thing that I wanted to say in the spirit of what Ella's saying here. It's not that thing at all anymore. I think what's more important to speak about is my intention or something. But that there's like a, it really matters to reflect, like our powers to reflect really matter, so that when we're bringing ourselves in realms of complexity where there are relationships at stake and wider world at stake and big, big things, to really find a, like, when I say this, what do I actually mean by it? What am I really saying there? And have I really known what that means to say that or not? Maybe I have, but maybe I haven't. So I feel like this is, to me, inviting us into a reflective practice where I know the way I'm taking it anyway in this moment is that when I think I've got something, when I think something is certain and I think about saying it and I intend to say it and I want to say it, can I find enough slowness and gentleness, as Ella's asking, and enough humility to stop and ask some questions of myself and to see whether my experiencing is included in this or whether it's just some kind of cognitive conclusion I've come to that I think everyone should listen to or something? Because I think also speaking of the experiencing part of, you know, what it was like to me, for me to witness that or to go through that or to feel that and to be in that when it happened, that's very different to having a set of opinions and interpretations about what did happen. And maybe both things matter, but I think it's very easy for me to kind of push away my experiencing and not think that there's value in that, value in bringing that forth and letting language be found because of that. That's a different avenue than having the opinions that I have and thinking I know what I think about things. So I'm really grateful for the deep kind of questioning that this is bringing to me. And also the quite excitingness, actually, of like, what is it to redefine or to rethink about safety, freedom, trust, and belonging? Already even asking the question, which I think, well, I don't know what any of them are anyway. And of course I do, in lots and lots of ways. And I could say lots of things that are probably really valuable and important. But just asking the question brings more creativity forth and more nuance and more less certainty about what they are, brings more life to them, life itself, like this beautiful invitation of language longs to settle while life refuses to stay still. Of course, life refuses to stay still. So belonging becomes a different thing on a Tuesday than it did on the Wednesday before, because life got put into belonging. And I saw another way that I feel unbelonged, or another way I feel deep belonging. And I didn't see that before. And I can throw that into the pot of the what it is-ness. So I'm really feeling like excited about wondering, letting go of my definitions and rebuilding them again somehow.
To end, it'd be easy to say at this point we've run out of time, you know, it's the end of our time, we're going to end, but I want to say something. I want to sort of plant a seed, Lizzie, for me and for you and for everyone as we come to an end today, which again is about time. So Ella's words that you drew attention to, I wonder whether listening has never been the search for better language. Maybe it's the slower practice of staying with one another until language itself grows gentle enough and humble enough to kneel before experience. These twin poles of certainty and not knowing and deciding now and letting things take their time. I think that we live in a culture that was with whose ideas of time were roundly shaped by things like train timetables, and so we all need to be on the same time, and product factory productivity, so things have to happen because the production line needs to get out. And in those domains, agreed time and measurable time really matter. But when we locate our understanding of being alive there in a sort of mechanistic view, and we don't include what Ella is saying, we miss out on something really important. And I want to end with an honoring of the end of things that Ella points to here, that sometimes, often, for the most important things, we don't know what anything means unless we will spend long enough, slow enough with one another. But I also want to say with ourselves, this is one of the things that I'm finding, is that I benefit enormously from letting things take their time in me long before I speak, long before I'm called on to say anything. And the understanding of time that we have, that most of us swim in, where things aren't of value unless they are settled and clear and bridge-like and now, closes off this entire world of understanding, which is not any finished understanding. It's a living, breathing, deepening, changing, flowing way of encountering ourselves and one another. And that, of course, in a way, is exactly what we've been trying to do here for these nearly 9 years of turning towards life. But I'm not just talking about that. I'm actually sort of making a real call to all of us that in some of the important things, we would benefit so much from following Ella's invitation of letting things stay alive. That I love this language, the slower practice of staying with, and I want to add with ourselves, with one another, with life, until language itself grows gentle enough and humble enough to kneel before experience. I think we might discover things about ourselves and one another and what it is to live well in the midst of freedom and belonging and trust and safety and everything else, if we were to include that in our lives, to include the slower practices and to give one another time. You know, for me to say to you, Lizzie, I understand what you're saying today, and I want to give you time because it might be different tomorrow. You might not know yet. Let's give one another time to understand a friendship, a marriage, a project, a life, some work, a set of relationships, a difficulty. Thank you for slowing down with me, Lizzie. I feel unendingly provisional in everything I've had to say today, and I'm looking forward to letting it settle in me. And I know we will return to this question again and again and again. And thank you, everyone, all of you, for being with us. For any of you who stay in this conversation to the end and then beyond, that's an act of slowing and not knowing. And we're definitely not packaging everything up in neat, easy takeaway-able to-do lists, which there is a place for, but that's not what we've been doing here. And what a joy to be in this long conversation, and what a joy to have you around us. And if you want to join us in September, please don't forget that you can. You can actually be with us and others in September, and there are lots of ways of doing that. Find out on turningtowards.life. And we will end now and be back together, all being well, this time next week. Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.